And much of what goes wrong in the economy is with people in power. And it's not just in government, right? The guys who become chairman of the board of General Motors. They're running this vast enterprise. They have helicopters and limousines that take them everywhere, and everyone comes and asks them, is very subservient and all this, and that can go to their head too, right? So heads of big corporations, you know, people with too much wealth, all these things can tend to corrupt us. But particularly in government, you know, the guy in General Motors has huge power, or had huge power. He just got fired, right? He had huge power over the company, but he couldn't make anybody buy one of their cars, nor could he make anybody work for the company, right? Everything is voluntary. You buy a car if you like it, you don't if you don't. But in government, you have power and people lack choice. So if you look at some of the policies we have, you know, if you look, what is power involved? Well, control, of course, telling other people what to do. In liberty, you've got choice. So, healthcare policy, it's all about the government controlling what healthcare options there are. When you buy health insurance, do you have a choice of what sort of things you want to get covered? No. I would like to buy healthcare insurance that doesn't cover me for psychiatric care. Now, I realize people have psychiatric problems, but I don't want insurance for that. If I want psychiatric care, I'm willing to pay for it. But I don't want to be insured for it. But I don't have that option. The state of Washington, where I live, says I have to have insurance that covers psychiatric care. So I don't have a choice. Various other kinds of care that I'd rather pay for if I want, but those are forced as mandatory. So what would healthcare medical care choice be? With people choosing what kind of health insurance they want, people choosing the health care, not the government deciding it. Power involves force. Liberty involves persuasion. Now, of course, things can go wrong, right? You go to a used car lot and the guy persuades you to spend a ton of money on a car that you realize later you don't want. You can make mistakes. People can persuade you to do things they wish you didn't, but that's a different thing from force. So a society built on choice and persuasion, economists argue, better than a society, and this is a political philosophy point as well, better than a society built on control and force. In particular, for public policy for extemp, the key concept, regulation. Now, they say for the financial industry, we need new regulation. For the healthcare industry, we need to reform regulation. Regulation used to mean just make regular, right? Make things standard, like weights and measures throughout the economy. What's the free market or the liberty alternative to regulation? What if we didn't have any regulation of doctors? Anybody who wanted to could hang a sign out of his door and say, I'm a doctor. Would that be okay? So, it's a mistake. See, one of the challenges is people say, wait a minute, if you don't believe in government control and regulation, you just want chaos. You just want people, you know, running around screaming and doing whatever they want. You know, you want anarchy. Well, there's an alternative. There are something in the middle here that are called institutions. And these institutions involve some kind of power, but involve liberty. For example, what's one institution that right now exists that exercises power over you, besides the U.S. government that could send you off to war or whatever? What other institution has some power relationship? Yeah, family. So here we've got an institution called family, and so there's a whole bunch of economics of the family, economic research on families. But here's an institution that it's a liberty institution, but for children, it involves a certain amount of power, right? Parents say, you have to do this. Now, they try and use persuasion, right, but they have recourse to power. It's like our income taxes are voluntary unless we don't pay them, right? So they make them your contribution, but that involves force. But with a family, this is a voluntary organization. So at age 6, you know, your parents have power over you. At age 14, they still have power, but not as much. What about age 18? Well, they have some kind, they can tell you, and it's sort of a power thing, but it's not really a power thing. So, I mean, you have this gradual emerging. One of the challenges is that government has used the institution of family to pretend that it's our, you know, uncle, right? Uncle Sam. Uncle Sam, he's not your dad, he's your uncle. He's giving you advice, telling you what you should do. So people are using the metaphor of family for this. What's another institution? The church. Does the church have power over you? Well, if you want to stay in the church, you know, they have some sort of control or influence. Same would be a company. Your parents work for a company. Your dad works for a company. Does it have power over him? Well, it has authority over him. If he wants to stay with the company, he has to follow what other people say, unless he's the president. But then there's maybe a board, and he has to do what the board says. So you have these separate institutions that provide order. And so for the one on healthcare, it's basically certification. In other words, we currently have a system that is mostly voluntary in a significant part of healthcare. The state has to be a doctor, you have to get an okay from the state, right? State of Colorado. But what if you're a brain surgeon? Does the state of Colorado approve you being a brain surgeon? No, any doctor can say, well, you know, I've done basic, I spent 10 years as a family doctor, I think I want to try my hand at brain surgery. Is the state going to tell him he can't? No. Instead, you have separate institutions. So that's why when you go into the doctor's office, look on the wall. What you'll see are things certifying his reputation, the college he graduated from, his degrees. Also, it'll say board certified. He's board certified at this or that other specialty. And that process is a voluntary one, right, where the board, he goes, he does his training, and the board says, okay, you've done well enough, you're board certified. This process is an alternative to government regulation. If government withdrew entirely from regulating medicine, what would happen? If the government said, oh, gee, Mr. Obama and Pelosi and all those, let's say they happened to cross a copy of the Constitution they haven't seen in a while, and they say, you know, we can't find in here power to regulate medicine. We thought we had power to run healthcare and decide medicine, but we can't find it in the Constitution. And then in the state capitol here in Colorado, they look at their Constitution, and by golly, it doesn't give them control of medical care either. So what happened? They say, we made a big mistake. We're going to abolish all federal control regulation of medical care. We made a mistake. Big mess. So what would happen? Yeah. So that would be one concern. Wait a minute. How would we get quality care? Well, first off, we've got lots of people that are already doctors. Some are very good, some are very bad. But right now, they have a certificate from the state, but they also have private certification. Who would be the one to decide whether doctors are qualified to do medical procedures? What's the institution in the middle that would be the organization who would help tell us whether someone was a good doctor or whether they, you know, should practice? Yeah. The insurance companies. Now, insurance companies aren't perfect, of course. So the insurance company. So you call up your insurance company and say, I've just talked to Bob Jones in my debate. He's on the debate club, and he says he's a brain surgeon, and he says he can do some surgery on me. Would you pay for that? The insurance company says no. You know, we're not going to cover insurance by anybody who isn't board certified. Again, a separate institution doesn't involve government. So the bottom line here is that if the government pulled out of the whole healthcare business, you would have more people providing healthcare, more doctors, more medical schools. Right now, the government prevents new medical schools from being built. It's a long story. But you'd have lots more doctors, lots more nurses, lots more quality medical care, and it'd be much cheaper. Brain surgeons would still make a ton of money, but someone who is just basically, you know, diagnosing you to see if you have a cold would probably make a lot less. But they wouldn't have government telling them what to do. Does that make sense? So this story goes on all through the economy, in different sectors of the economy. Food and Drug Administration. You'll find through the year stories and scandals and issues with the FDA. Food and Drug Administration right now is actively preventing the development of cures for cancer. Right, spending hundreds of millions of dollars through the national institutes, but the FDA is blocking cancer research. And the story of that is pretty amazing. There's more to it, but basically to solve cancer, you need to have, cancer operates in like 15 ways at once, and you need to have a way to go after 5 or 10 different pathways that cause cancer in each cancer, the ways that it makes it happen, which means you need to use a bunch of different drugs simultaneously. The FDA prevents testing of multiple uses of drugs for things like cancer because they, for whatever reason. Now again, why does something like that happen? Because the FDA is using regulations instead of a voluntary method that would be certification. So what if we abolished, and FDA stands for the Food and Drug Administration, the pure Food and Drug Administration. Their job is to make sure our food is safe and that our drugs are safe and effective. What if we abolished it tomorrow? President looks at the Constitution, boy, gosh, I can't find any power to regulate food and drug. What would happen? So the argument is that if we didn't have the government regulating pure food and drugs, anybody could sell anything. Right? Any guy could put up a sign saying cure for cancer, $15, could sell foods, yeah.
Couldn't the consumer just take the place of something like that? Like if it was abolished, couldn't word of mouth help spread effectiveness of a certain drug or something?
Well, word of mouth does spread information, but how accurate is it? You've done that thing where you all line up in a huge circle, and somebody starts by saying something to the guy next to him, and it goes all the way around the room, and by the time it gets back, it's something completely different. I agree with you, consumers are interested, but I would argue you need an intermediary institution, somebody in the middle. Who is in the middle between companies that make drugs and consumers that buy drugs? Yeah.
Pharmacies.
So Walgreens, let's say the Food and Drug Administration disappears tomorrow, and maybe it's a few months before anybody notices, right? Food and Drug Administration disappears tomorrow. Walgreens doesn't care whether the FDA exists or not. Walgreens on its own wants to make sure that it doesn't sell any drugs to customers that kill them, right? It's very bad for business to kill your customers. So Walgreens has a huge incentive to do everything it can to be safe. You say, well, wouldn't they just like sell dangerous drugs really cheap to make extra profits? Well, again, if their customers get sick or die, Walgreens goes out of business. So you've got Walgreens, Walmart, 50 other pharmacies, big and small, that are the intermediaries between the drug companies that make drugs and the people that consume them, as well as the doctors who do the prescription. There's a problem. How do you get that information? And in the market economy, problems are opportunities. Every time there's a problem, it's an opportunity. So the problem of health food stores and pharmacies selling pills of various kinds, there's separate companies that come out to do the testing, independent labs. And then there's competing independent labs. One classic example that I use, anything electric, like this device, anything electric, there's absolutely no government regulations over electric things like this that use electricity, things that could kill us very rapidly. Toasters, you name it. No government regulations on electricity. How do we have safety? Well, it turns out that everything you buy that's electrical has a little circle with a U and an L in it, Underwriters Laboratories. That's an independent, nonprofit organization that tests every electrical appliance. No company, Walmart, Walgreens, nobody is going to carry an electrical appliance unless it's been sent to Underwriters Laboratories for testing. So you could have Underwriters Laboratories simply take over the functions of the Food and Drug Administration. You could transfer it to the FDA or make the FDA a nonprofit. But the point is that voluntarily, without force, we solve the problem. Interestingly, the FDA, again, just very briefly on this, which can't be briefly because I've already spent too much time on it, but briefly concluding it, remember, when you're trying to make things safe, like drugs, you can have two kinds of mistakes, what they call a type A mistake and a type B mistake. A type A mistake is to allow a dangerous drug on the market that kills people or harms people. A type B mistake is to not let a safe drug on the market that would save lives, but you're bottling it up at the FDA. So the numbers by leading scholars now argue that the FDA is killing thousands, maybe tens of thousands of people every year by type B errors. Right, there's lots of drugs that are approved in Japan and other countries that seem to be perfectly safe, but for one reason or another, the FDA can't get approval. You'll find articles this year in Extemp, I would think, the head of the FDA turns out to be linked with a particular company, and the FDA is blocking a competitor from getting its drug approved. Now, maybe it's perfectly on the up and up, but it looks like a conflict. So these companies lobby Congress to try and push for their drugs to be approved and others not, and it's a big mess. Now, Yeah, so that's the challenge. It's always a problem. You don't know. Drugs that are perfectly safe for some people are going to be deadly for others. That's the way our systems are different. And what's funny about this whole thing is, like in these health food stores, they sell all sorts of drugs that they're natural drugs, they're chemicals, and you can go in there and say, gosh, you know, my heart's been feeling, you could do the same thing you'd go to a doctor. And a lot of the health food stores, they'll say, oh, well, take this or take that. In other words, people give advice. Right? And you've walked into the store and you said, gosh, my foot's hurting. Do you have a pill for that? And they say, well, have you considered this, this, and this? So that kind of, what you want are some levels of, now at a health food store it's a chain, they want to make sure that their guys aren't giving, you know, ad hoc advice from something they read in a magazine. Right? If you don't watch your employees, that's exactly what they'll do, right? They read a magazine and they'll, you know, a salesman comes in for the XYZ super vitamin, mega vitamin. It says, by the way, our new study shows our vitamin cures cancer. And so the salesman, unless someone's paying attention, you know, will begin passing that on. So this is our challenge. But how do you solve the challenge? Whether it's ethical behavior in debate, or in pharmacies, or in manufacturing, you have voluntary ways to handle safety, security, health-related issues, and you have top-down force issues. Now, I set these sort of ideas up, and another way to look at this comes up in international issues, the planners, the searchers. This sounds like a simple idea, but it's amazingly powerful. This came up in a book by William Easterly on Africa. The question is, why is Africa so poor? I mean, we've given like $500 billion in aid money to Africa over the past decades. Why is it so poor still? Easterly argues that this aid money that comes into Africa comes with planners. They come in and they've got a plan to deal with malaria, or a plan to get people access to better drinking water, or a plan to raise new crops. And they'll come in with executives, people with all these ideas, and they'll try and administrate the plan from the top down using this aid money. That's very different than how things happen in the U.S. We have searchers, basically entrepreneurs. These are people that go out and try and figure out how to solve problems. Right? So the post office, you could say, is a planning agency. They have plans made at the top. They have funding that comes from the government, and they try and figure out how to deliver packages and mail. But FedEx, you know, who's the chairman? You know, Fred Smith, the chairman of FedEx, in graduate school, he did a study. He said, now that we've got airplanes, what about sending, you know, picking up overnight mail from all over the country, sending it to one place, sorting it, and then flying it back out? Wouldn't that be a better way to mail things than what the post office does? Even though the government subsidized, couldn't we make money doing that? He got a B or a C on the paper, because it didn't seem like a workable paper to his professor. But this is a guy trying to figure out how to solve the problem of mediocre service from the post office. And so there's FedEx, there's UPS, and a bunch of others basically trying to search for the solution. Does that make sense? Basically describes the homeschool world. In public school, you've got bureaucrats in Washington and every state trying to figure out how to design schools, how to design curriculum, how to train teachers, all these plans to get good education. How does the homeschool world work? It's complete chaos. In other words, it's searching. I don't know how many homeschoolers there are, but there seem to be as many entrepreneurs with homeschool companies as there are homeschoolers. Right? You've got all these people that get in the process of homeschooling to teach their kids, and the kids figuring out how to do stuff, and then 5 years later they're selling a product. You know, something that worked for them, and they're trying to figure out if it works for other people. And that's a natural process. In the computer industry, that's just what happens. People, they're playing video games, and a couple years later, they're writing video games. Or they're participating in somebody else's social networking site, and they don't like something about it, so they write their own code and do their own. So that kind of searching process brings dramatic progress throughout the economy. Better products, cheaper products. But the planning process can't find that information. And the economic concept here, there's two reasons for this. Economists talk about basically information problems and knowledge problems. Why do economists disagree so much? you know, the people, these are the guys advising government. They're sort of like the wizards in the old stories who would advise the king on what he shouldn't do. Well, today's wizards are basically economists advising the government. Raise taxes, lower taxes, nationalize this company, privatize that company. And the challenge is there's lots of people paying economists, hiring economists, to come up with certain results. And so that's one of the reasons it makes it so complicated. I talked earlier about this one principle by Henry Hazlitt, the broken window fallacy, and I've gone through this as sort of a summary of what we've covered so far. But these ideas of, why the government should be limited, the founders put these ideas in the Constitution. They limited the economic power of the state when the Constitution was more powerful. And just the connection, this is a connection of economics and history. The founders didn't use the term special interest groups. They used the term factions. They said the reason why the government shouldn't interfere with the economy is it excites factions. So, for example, when the government starts intervening in the automobile industry, saying mandating, giving grants to General Motors and Ford, or mandating mileage standards, or mandating labor union agreements, that gets people excited. So basically the labor unions are very active in politics. They spend a huge amount of money supporting usually the Democratic Party because they know the government is going to decide whether their labor union prospers or not. Right? The companies, the shareholders lobby government to try and get control. The people that own the bonds for General Motors lobby government. So you get all these factions fighting in politics because they know when the government makes a decision, that's a success or failure for their company, right? So, I mean, basically, the buyout of General Motors by the government, why did the government do that? Mainly to save the labor union contracts, right? If the companies had allowed to go bankrupt, they would still be in operation, but they would have been able to pay lower wages. And the argument is the government did not want those labor union contracts, the wages lowered, supposedly because of the connections between the unions and the current administration and the Congress. If you read in the Declaration, they talk about the long train of abuses, all these abuses that England was putting on the United States. We have had a long train of abuses from the federal government interfering in various aspects of the economy, and that's part of American history that you can apply to extent.